And hello to all. Welcome to the teleclass, Study Strategies for the CIC Exam. This is the second in our teleclass series on CIC preparation that we're doing this year. And as I mentioned earlier, we've made special arrangements to cover all of the test questions during the next hour. So listen closely. Our speakers today are Sharon Christofiak and Marie Kasai. Sharon is the Certification Board of Infection Control and Epidemiology President-elect. She is widely recognized for her educational activities, and perhaps most importantly, at least most importantly to me, she is one of the wonderful people who help make the teleclass education program run. One of the people that helps make me look really good while so I can do very little and still look very good. Sharon, thank you for that.
Thanks, Paul. It's all a lie, folks.
Marie Kasai lectures locally and nationally on a variety of infection control and health-related topics, including performance improvement, CJD. If you do a Google search for her name, you will get dozens upon dozens of hits. She is a very popular and very active lady. She presented the CJD patient's family perspective at the World Health Organization in 1999 and at several other professional organizations, national and regional conferences, including the Funeral Directors Association and the Federal Ambulatory Surgery Association. I find really interesting. She is a CBIC board member, and it's an honor to have both of these highly acclaimed experts with us. But to open the teleclass, Study Strategies for the CIC Exam, I am pleased to present Sharon Christofiak. Sharon.
Thanks, Paul. Greetings, everyone. I was all set to say good afternoon, but I realize it may be morning or afternoon or evening for some of you. And on behalf of the whole certification board, the CIBIC board, we'd like to welcome you and thank you for your interest in certification. I think, as Paul said, world famous for education. Everybody is probably going to be a little surprised at the tack we're taking for today for the teleclass. This is something we've never really focused on talking about. How do you prepare for the exam? We've tried to kind of guide you through and ease your fears about the exam itself. On the last teleclass we had on February 21st, we were able to show you pictures of what your typical certification, you know, study carol would be for taking any kind of exams through AMP. So we hope that helped. But this was something we thought may be something unfamiliar to many of you. It certainly was to people that were in college when I was there. And it seems to be something that Marie and I both discussed. You tend to learn in education classes or like getting an advanced degree. So hopefully some of this will be new for everybody. And it's kind of very reflective of how well do you know yourself. So if you want to flip to the second slide, you've seen the objectives of the course. What we want to do today is to help you identify who you are and how you study. It's probably nothing you've ever really sat down and thought seriously about, but we want you to be able to prepare for the entry level, the computer-based exam, and really have that confidence level when you walk in to take the exam. What we're going to do, and this is primarily at the end of the class, Marie's going to concentrate on going through the content outline and indicating certain things that may be good to study by yourself, good to study as part of a group, based on what you learn about yourself today in the teleclass. So it's going to be totally different from what you thought, and yes, we will get through all the questions on the exam for you. Slide number three. Just to review, in case any of you weren't on our teleclass for February 21st, Marge Gallagher, Kathy Roy Horn, and I discussed different types of test takers and identified, do you go through an exam and try and answer everything you know first and then go back and pick up the ones that you didn't really know? Or do you take your time and go through very slowly, one question at a time, thinking about it? Those were the turtles. And Marge was able to identify different ways of exam taking. They also talked about improvement strategies for how do you get into the exam, trying to be calm, knowing what it's going to be like, so there's no unplanned expectations that all of a sudden throw you. Oh, I didn't know I could do this or couldn't do that. But today we're going to talk about you, how to prepare, and how to study. Next slide. It's going to be a challenge. How well do you know yourself? And I can share with the group, I've taken all kinds of continuing education classes and have a minor in education and really had never thought about how I actually learn things. I always thought I was good at certain things, and as you're going to see later on, I've always been good at math, but I didn't really stop to think about how I studied or learned for any kind of exams. Some of this I really wish I had known numerous years ago when I was trying to get my bachelor's degree, but how you learn new information. Next slide. There's different learning styles, and I think probably everybody appreciates this, but it's something you may not have really tried to analyze yourself. You may be a visual learner. Visual learners learn through seeing things. You may see things in pictures and remember. I can share with you that I actually got a magazine recently, and there was a lovely picture on the front of it. Beautiful courtyard, and for some unknown reason, my brain was able to remember that I'd been there. And I was actually able to get a photograph album that I'd put together in 1980. And I was able to find almost the exact same picture. And it was in Portugal, which is really bizarre. I felt like, okay, I don't have Alzheimer's yet. However, I had an awakening that I'm a visual learner. So if you're this type of a learner, that you can remember things like diagrams, pictures in textbooks, things you've seen a video of, etc., things like this, you're a visual learner. Next slide. Visual learners come in different sizes and shapes, but you may think about whenever you've been in a lecture or a classroom situation, do you tend to take notes? It's something that I know that I personally do. I'm real big on taking notes. Don't always go back to look at them, but I do take notes, and I also try and sit someplace in the classroom where I'm close enough to the instructor to kind of absorb the whole picture, body language, facial expressions, and just remember things. Somebody could ask me a question later, and I'll remember thinking about what happened in the class. So a lot of it's visual from what I remember people doing or any kind of audiovisual aids. Next slide. So for visual learners in the group, try and think of ways you could create lists to keep up and organize your thoughts when you're trying to study for the exam. If you're going through things like isolation categories, you may want to come up with, you know, a category such as contact precautions and list various things that you'd want to know. This way, your mind memorizes that list, and it's kind of magic. All of a sudden, you'll learn better. You often recognize words by sight. And this is how you would do with a contact precautions list. You may, in real life, remember faces but forget people's names. It's something that you've seen the face, you know who they are, you might not remember exactly what their name was. You may have a well-developed imagination. I sometimes think about infection control when I'm, like, cleaning the house. So that must be imagination. I'm not focusing. You can be easily distracted by movement or action if you're in the classroom or if you're at the certification testing center, whether it's an H&R Block or another type center. So you may have the ability to sit someplace where you will be less distracted. You may be unaware of the noise if you really get into the topic. So if you're taking the exam, you may zone out and totally concentrate. Next slide. Another good tip for visual learners is to use, when you're writing down these lists, highlighters, yellow, pink, blue, to remember important points in a text or in your handwritten notes. When you're making your lists, you may want to do something like draw charts or put some kind of a drawing, things like for varicella, chickenpox. You know, you're thinking things along this list. Visualize the information as a picture to aid memorization. We happen to have a airborne contact sign at my former hospital that had a chicken on the back so that the different people on the various units could remember that this was the sign for chickenpox. I didn't create that. You may want to use things like multimedia resources. computers, videos, illustrated articles, different things that stimulate your visual learning capacity. And try and study in a quiet place away from any kind of verbal disturbances, because after all, you are the visual learner. Next slide. There are those of us that are also auditory or verbal learners, people that learn from listening. And these people tend to learn best through going to lectures, having discussions, talking things through, even if it's just talking to yourself, listening to what other people have to say about a topic. They will notice the tone of someone's voice, how fast they spoke, different nuances of instructors, and by able to capture this kind of inference, they remember situations. If they're looking at written information, such as in a textbook, they may have very little meaning absorbed until they actually hear it. Auditory learners sometimes can actually benefit from reading the text out loud. If you're sitting home on the kitchen table, looking at something you're trying to study for the CIC exam or anything else in your practice, you may want to read it to yourself out loud or even use some kind of a recording device and then play it back. And when you hear it again and again, you will retain the information better and you'll remember when you get to the exam. Next slide. Auditory learners, on the other hand, often remember somebody's name but will forget the face. It's something they've heard the name, somebody may have introduced themselves, but they may not remember their face. Often they'll do very well working out solutions or problems by talking about them, maybe with a colleague, it may be an ID doc, and another nurse on a floor. Even if it's never spoken out loud, you're talking in your own mind, reviewing things. You will remember if you're an auditory learner. The problem is you can be easily extracted by outside noise. If somebody driving by is playing a lot of music, et cetera, it may be disruptive to your study habits. Helps to work someplace where it's quiet, even if you're talking to yourself. Next slide. Auditory learners. They like to participate in class discussions or debates. It's a great way to remember things because this is how you learn. You may want to use a tape recorder during lectures or instead of taking notes. You're not going to be able to absorb the stuff that you might take right down on your note-taking. Read the texts out loud. You may want to do something like create a musical jingle to aid memorization. You may be able to sing something. And I can share that at one point, trying to memorize the books of the Bible when I was very small, one of the ministers in our church happened to have a song that people sang, and that was the way they could remember it. Using verbal analogies, ways to remember a point, thinking about how you encountered a patient once with botulism, trying to remember that situation and the presentation of the disease. You can comfortably make speeches and presentations. You may be the best teacher of the group, so this is another clue that you're an auditory learner. Next slide. The next group we want to talk about are the tactile or the ones that use kinesthetic learning. They learn through moving, doing, and touching. And you'll notice in the PowerPoint at the bottom of the slide, a lot of people in nursing or any of the healthcare professions, medical technology, are very tactile learners. We learn best through hands-on, exploring the physical world around us. If you think about the famous analogy, learn one, do one, teach one, this is something that's very easy for someone who's a tactile learner to do. You're basically doing it, you remember, and you're able to teach the next person. Unfortunately for many of us in healthcare, we may find it very hard to sit for a long time period. Those of us that are stuck at our desks now doing a lot of computer work, et cetera, may be distracted. After a while, we are so used to being involved with something else. Our lives are very complicated anymore in infection control. You may need to get up and do something else because you're distracted by your own learning style or work style. Next slide. For this type of learner, you'll do best possibly by taking notes during the lecture or when you're reading something, kind of like the original, the verbal learner. The thing that's different is you may draw or doodle while you're listening to these lectures or, you know, even taking your notes. You'll do best with hands-on activities, things like projects, demonstrations, or labs. If you're trying to study for the CIC exam, one of the best ways for you to retain the information would be to demonstrate some of this. Do a lecture, a performance, demonstrate things holding your isolation signs, things for other people in your department or on your floors or different areas. And it's something that will be interesting to you and your mind will retain the information better. Next slide. Other tips for you. Take frequent study breaks because you are programmed to be very active. If you sit and try and study, like those days when we tried to cram, when we were trying to learn things back in our early training days, it doesn't always work. You need to have a system that works for you. And study breaks may be fine. Get up. Move around. One of the interesting concepts I had seen was trying to study while you're on an exercise bike. Your legs may be moving, you're pedaling, you're possibly gaining cardiovascular, you know, excellence, losing weight, but you're also learning better that way. People can even do things like molding a piece of clay, fooling with some kind of like an exercise ball, a tension ball, while you're trying to learn. And because your brain is wired this way, it's something that you will actually retain the information better. Chew gum while you're studying. Another suggestion that's out there is to use bright colors to highlight your reading material. Dress up your workspace with posters or anything that's very dynamic because you're an active person. If you wish, this type of people can actually listen to music while you're studying. It's like they've got multiple channels with which they can process things at the same time. Another suggestion for the active learners, tactiles, is to look through the reading material first. Get a rough idea what it's about before trying to read it in detail. And later in the presentation, we talk a little bit about global learners, and this is a characteristic very common to the tactile group. Next slide. Things aren't broken down into three basic groups. We all are very different, and there's a concept out there in the educational literature called multiple intelligence. We all have it. Next slide. Some of us may have visual or spatial intelligence, which is the ability to perceive the visual. Things like I mentioned earlier with maps, pictures. People that have this gift, essentially, have the way to remember vivid mental images to retain information. And people in a lot of fields, such as architecture, interior designers, mechanics, engineers, have this type of a trait. They can look at something and they can do things with it mentally, whether it's designing a room for the interior designer or for the architect to build a building. They have spatial perception. Next slide. There are those people that have verbal or linguistic intelligence, and that's the ability to learn words and language. You may be either a verbal learner or a visual learner, but you may also have or not have verbal intelligence. These people are very detailed when it comes to auditory skills, generally great speakers. They tend to think in words rather than pictures. And if you look at the group, I'm sure you know people in this category. Teachers, lawyers, politicians, and translators are often gifted in this manner. Logical and mathematical intelligence, and I have to admit this was one of my gifts, I can think mathematically. The ability to use reason, logic, and numbers. These people tend to think conceptually in numerical patterns, how to remember things. And there may be a way for those of you that are logical thinkers for you to identify ways to study so that you can link some of the things involved in infection control practice. These people are generally curious. They ask a lot of questions. They like to do things like experiment, like try a different sign or different ways of doing things. It's kind of a challenging thing for this type of group. This would be scientists, engineers, computer programmers, mathematicians, accountants. All seem to have this gift. And it is a gift. If you're not mathematically inclined, it's something you may not be able to learn. On the next slide, body or kinesthetic intelligence. And this is the ability to control body movements and handle objects. So you can see in the bottom corner of this slide, I've included a hockey player, which many of you may be interested in right now with the playoffs. There is no way, if you're not inclined to be bodily intelligent, that you would ever become the greatest goalie in the hockey leagues. These people express themselves through movement. They have great balance, hand-eye coordination. They may be tremendous at any of the sports that involve things like balls. By interacting in spaces around them, they remember and process information. So the usual group, the athletes, dancers, etc. Firefighters I found interesting that were in this group, but they are all very skilled and able to do things physically as part of their learning. Next slide. There are those people that have music or rhythmic intelligence, and this is the ability to produce and appreciate music. People that are musically inclined think in sounds, rhythms, and patterns, and this may be the group that comes up with the little song to remember how they, you know.
I think maybe Sharon might have just hung up on herself. Marie, are you with us?
I'm here, yeah. Do you want me to take over there?
I think carry on until we hear that Sharon's come back with us.
Okay. I think she was talking about musical or rhythmic intelligence. And this is these people are, and I apologize for being a little hoarse and welcome everybody. These are people who have the ability to produce and appreciate music. And as Sharon mentioned before, sometimes just doing a little song, doing a little, like we do with Happy Birthday, trying to encourage people to use the 20 seconds for, or 10 seconds to 15 seconds, depending where you are, to do their hand washing. And that sometimes helps people to remember. These individuals immediately respond to music, and they either appreciate it or criticize what they hear. Many of these learners also are sensitive to environmental sounds, crickets, bells, dripping taps, etc. So they're very sensitive to the environment and what is going on in the environment as far as the music or the rhythm of the specific environment. Musicians, disc jockeys, singers, and composers have these particular skills. Slide, please. These gifts are taught, These are gifts that cannot be taught. These are just the makeup of individuals. And it's important for us as individuals, if we're going to really truly understand ourselves and how we learn, is to evaluate ourselves. So we need to ask the questions. For instance, when you're teaching others, do you tell stories and make verbal analogies to demonstrate a point? People who actually do a lot of education, and I'm one of these storytellers, I like to use examples. I like to tell stories because that's the way I learn, and that's the way I present certain data or certain information for others. Do you like to participate in discussions? Is that a way you learn? Some people, if you're providing a class, and I know we've all given classes or tried to give classes, and you say, okay, now we're going to have a discussion group, there are certain people will jump right in, and there are other people will just cringe in the corner and say, no, 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 no. And that's how we have to evaluate ourselves. What do we like to do, and how do we learn in that particular situation? And people who, if you're teaching others, do you like to provide oral directions rather than written ones? Do you like to put everything on the board and say, step by step, this is what we're going to do? Or do you like to just go over it on a slide or go over it as an introduction to what you're teaching? And when you're learning, ask yourself these questions. Do I typically prefer written instructions rather than oral ones? Do I like everything in front of me in writing so I can refer back to them? Do I take notes? And as Sharon mentioned prior to this, some people take notes consistently on every single word that is spoken. Other people take notes and just highlight certain topics. So ask yourself, how do you do and what do you do when you're teaching, when you're learning? Have you figured yourself out yet? Do you know whether you're auditory, visual, et cetera? If you're not auditory, you will probably sit in a group learning session and not really remember what you've heard. If you're not visual, you may read a page and then realize that you don't know what you've just read, so you have to go back and reread and reread. Some people can read a page. The visual learners can read a page, and it's part of them forever. They just absorb it like a sponge. Other people, they have to continuously, as I said, reread and reread. So you need to ask yourself, what is my style of learning? How do I learn best, and what do I need to do to learn? Also, if you are not tactual, you rarely take – I'm sorry, I forgot to tell you to turn the slides. I apologize. Has everybody caught up? We're on the top of the page that says, have you figured yourself out yet? If you're not tactual, you rarely take notes, or only for the things that cannot be remembered easily, such as numerical data. So you don't have to take every word down, but you do need to take the numerical information down so that you retain it. Once you understand your learning style, you can better decide how to prepare for anything. Slide, please. Consider the following. If you are a visual learner, find diagrams, charts, schematics, photographs, and other visual representation of the information you want to remember. One good thing is, a suggestion is, when you're studying for the exam, look at the chain of infection. Understand what that means and try to fill in the blanks. And another suggestion is, when you have a disease, such as hepatitis, that you may be studying, take the disease itself, and if you need to have visual learning tools, take the disease and plot it into each of the little chains in the infection, and that will help you to remember. You can go to the next step and actually integrate into that chain preventive strategies between each of the links. How do I prevent the infection from the causative organism to the reservoir, et cetera? You might want to print different topics on different color paper. You might want to do a flow chart. You may want to do a poster board for yourself. You may want to print out the isolation guidelines and study a chart, or look at the isolation guidelines and actually plot out a chart for you so that they're easy to remember. If you find that group study isn't helping you, you may have to rely basically on your visual skills. Slide, please. If you're one of the auditory learners, study groups can be particularly effective. Because when you have a study group, you can gain understanding of material by hearing various different explanations. Also in a study group, and I find this is my best way of learning, you have the opportunity to review a question and maybe challenge each other on the answer, or say, okay, I see this way. Somebody else may say, well, I see it a different way. So you're learning all aspects of the specific question or the specific point that you are attempting to learn. You also learn even more when you do the explaining. So if you're explaining your part or your perception or your answer or what you've learned related to a specific topic, it is very important. And if you don't do it in a group, you may. And one of the suggestions is talk to your cat or talk to yourself. Or you can even tape it and then play it back. Try to attend lectures such as grand rounds, such as chapter meetings. Very, very important if you're an auditory learner because you will hear different things from different people at these venues. Excuse me. Also, you might want to re-listen to the Weber telecasts and classes. Slide, please. So the next question is, are you an active or reflective learner? Active learners tend to like group work more than reflective learners. Reflective learners like to work alone. So if you're an active learner, work with others to guess what you will be asked on a test and figure out how you will answer it. Ask each other questions. As I said to you before, discuss the answers. Discuss what you see. Discuss the interpretation. You will always retain information better if you find ways to do something with it. So even if you, as you're in this process of doing this active learning and the group discussion, you may also want to use an example. If you like examples and if you learn from examples, reflect back on a patient who demonstrates the information that you're trying to learn so you can connect it to a specific individual. Slide, please. If you're reflective, don't simply read or memorize the material. Stop periodically to review what you've read, and think of possible questions or applications of what you've just read. So you're not just reading it, you're trying to apply it. You're trying to, once again, look and connect it with patients that you may have taken care of or situations that you may have experienced while you're working as an infection prevention and control practitioner. You might also find it helpful to write short summaries of topics in your own words. Summarize. You know, make little quips. Some people use index cards. And this will take a little extra time, but it will enable you to retain the material more effectively because you're actually doing something. You're being active in one way, but you also have the ability to be reflective in another way. Slide, please. Are you sequential or global? Sequential learners tend to gain understanding in linear steps, with each step following logically from the previous one. So you go through your text. This is a suggestion. Go through the APIC text in order of the chapters. See how they flow. See what how one chapter contributes or flows from the previous chapter, or the information flows from the previous chapter. Global learners, on the other side, tend to learn in large chunks. They absorb material randomly without seeing connections, and then suddenly they get it. So ask yourself, do I need to go step by step by step, or can I look globally at my job and the information that I need to learn and then pull it all together so that finally I get it? Pick out the chapters that you really need to work on, the things in your areas of weakness. For instance, I need to, for me, every time I study for the exam, every time I do the SAIR, I have to literally go over all of this statistical material because that's my weakness. So I know that that's something that I have to go back, and sometimes I use multiple different methods of learning it and reinforcing it. Are you sequential or global? Again, global, before you begin to study, the suggestion is, look at the first section of a chapter in the text. Skim through the entire chapter to get an overview. Okay, so you just have an idea of what you're going to look at. And then do so. It may take some time, but it may save you from going over and over again the individual parts of the chapter later on. So review it first and then go over it. Instead of spending a short time on every subject every night, you may also want to find it much more productive for you to immerse yourself in individual subjects rather than large books or individual subjects for large blocks of time, and then go from block to block to block. Okay, so those are various different ways you may learn. Ask yourself those questions, kind of fit yourself into a specific area. So for everyone, we need to look at ways to learn. And as Sharon said, I actually think that people who volunteer to do lectures or do presentations for specific groups, it's a very, very good way to learn because you have multiple different learning styles combined in that particular presentation, or because you have to develop it, so you have to look at all of the information. You have to present it in a way that people are going to understand with living different learning needs, and then you learn from the feedback that you get from the individuals who are listening to you. Further steps for everyone to consider is, we all come from different settings and backgrounds. Try to relate your infection control subjects to things you already know. I find repeatedly I go back to training and the things that I learned in training and patients that I had when I was a student. I happened to learn in an era where we did a lot of hospital work, so I have the opportunity to do that. And it helps me to remember the evolution of the diseases and what's happened then versus what happens now. And that helps me instill those memories in my mind. Never lose faith in yourself. You eventually will understand the different material and be ready to complete the exam. If you have to go over it again, go over it again. Some people take the questions and do self-tests. And there are tests available in the guidebook. And also now you can actually get a sample test online. And taking those tests first and then learning from your mistakes and learning from what you successfully did will help you study from the exam. Okay, slide. The content outline. First section, and we'll go over it and I'll give you some examples, is the identification of the infectious disease processes. First of all, you want to, under this particular topic, is to interpret the results of diagnostic tests, your labs, your x-rays, and other tests specific to infection control. Be able to interpret Gram stains and know which particular diseases or organisms show up on a Gram stain and how they look. And, for instance, you might want to look at mycobacterium. What does it look like on a Gram stain? What is the significance of the Gram stain? Recognize sentinel events and epidemiologically significant organisms for immediate review and investigation, and not, such as SARS. What did we know with that? Now, there may not be a lot on an exam about SARS, but there will be information specifically on your tuberculosis and other diseases that are very, very common. And we try, as we expand the exam, to include some of the new information as well. For visual suggestions, write yourself notes on the lab reports. Take a lab report that you see every day and look at the Gram stain. Look at what it means. Look at the final result of that particular organism. So when you see Neisseria meningitidis, go back and say, well, what was the Gram stain on this? What was the other colonies? What else did they see on this particular specimen? Talk to your colleagues in the lab or a physician about the results. Get to know your microbiologist. And if you have a question, it's good to go down and have them show you some of the things on slides if you need the visual learning aspect of it, or if you need to have that visual learning. Have them show you the organism and have them show you how they identify it. Verbal, talk to the colleagues in the lab, as I said. Talk about not only having them show you, but talk to them how they get to the diagnosis or how they get to identify a specific organism. Visit the lab if you're a kinesthetic type learner and ask someone to show you the culture plate. So it's a combination. You're getting visual, but you're also getting other types of learning involved in there. Assess patient employee status. This is another part of the first section of the exam. You're going to be looking at signs and symptoms of infections, exposure to communicable diseases. What are the lab results that stimulate your investigation or tell you that something is a disease or an organism or a communicable disease or infection of concern? What is the risk of transmission, and what are some of the host risk factors for that particular patient or employee with a specific disease? Excuse me. Look at the Heyman's book, which is Control of Communicable Diseases Manual. That's a book that we suggest that you get to know. It has all the diseases that in. It talks about exposure. It talks about prophylaxis. It talks about isolation. It talks about risks of transmission. It's one of the books that is on your list for reference for preparing for the exam. Look at your candidate handbook, which is another thing to do. Look at your sample questions. For instance, the one about foodborne illness. Well, how would you go about figuring out the answer? Well, if you're visual, you may want to list all the organisms that potentially are responsible for that particular disease, for the salmonella or for the outbreak related to turkey. Look at the incubation periods for each of those organisms and try to fit the incidence or the particular situation into the analysis of what you're doing so that you understand exactly what is happening. If you're verbal, you might want to talk to your ID physician about food poisoning and say to him, well, listen, I have this outbreak. I think it's related to turkey. What would be the organism? And what do you think we should be looking at? If you're a kinesthetic learner, check your refrigerator at home. Visit the facilities kitchen and talk with the manager. You will be surprised how much they know about food poisoning and can actually share with you. So that's just one example of the first section of the exam or the content of the exam slide. Second is the surveillance and epidemiologic investigation. Here we look at surveillance and various different components of surveillance. How do you do it? What are some specifics related to surveillance? What are some key surveillance? How do you do a numerator and denominator? What about outbreak investigation? How do you proceed with outbreak investigation if you have an outbreak? How do you know you have an outbreak? So those are some of the topics that come under that particular outline content. The third one is infection prevention and control, and these are strategies for the prevention of infection. look at the different diseases, how would you prevent the transmission of that particular disease? What would you do, and what type of isolation would you implement for a specific patient coming in with a specific set of symptoms, and how would you protect the your staff and the other patients in a situation like that? And then the fourth section is program management and communication. What does your program look like? How do you manage your program? What are the components? What about your Infection Prevention and Control Committee? What other aspects of your program is strategic, and how do you define it? How do you do your risk assessment in order to identify the components of your program? The one of the biggest things that has just been and will be just, it's just been completed, and it's going to be published in a very near, I'm not exactly sure whether it's the next edition, but it's going to be the new APIC standards for infection prevention and control. And it's this national standards, and this is the group of things that kind of explains the program, kind of explains your job. So look at that and look at how they expand upon the program. Look at the Joint Commission and look in your text. Those are two good references for looking at the infection prevention and control program. And then aspects of communication. What is your role as the ICP? To whom should you communicate certain aspects related to an infection, related to an outbreak? The fifth section is your education, and in there will be some aspects of education. What type of learner are you going to be exposed to? How do you approach different learners? How do you precipitate learning for your adult learner versus the other types of learners, and learners in the 20th century versus the learners that we knew? Because the young people learn very differently, and we're all discovering that. But look at the basic principles and then see how you can adapt them. And the last section is on infection control aspects of employee health. And that will look at what some of the basic requirements are. What about TSTs? What about interpretation of the TST, which is your MANTU? What about post-exposure prophylaxis? What about hepatitis, and how do you know somebody is immune to hepatitis versus somebody who is a carrier of hepatitis? So it's very comprehensive, and it's a various, it's a look at all of the aspects of employee health. So taking all these things into consideration, looking at the outline, considering what we've just discussed, everything, strategy is going to be important, and I just changed the slide again. I apologize. Each section has different numbers of questions based on what ICPs indicated was important in their lives on the last practice analysis. And for those of you who participated in the practice analysis, which was done a couple years ago, we take that very seriously, and we look at what ICPs are doing today in their practice, and that's the basis for the questions on the exam. Figure out what your weaknesses are by reviewing the task statements. Where do I not feel comfortable? Where do I need to learn more? Now that you know how you learn, devise a way to maximize your retention and understanding of the areas of practice. See how you best can connect what you need to know with your learning skills and with the types of learning that you must do in order to retain that information. Do some calculations related to rates using simple calculator rather than your computer. So you want something very simple, and you want to be able to use the calculator when you take the exam. So those are a lot of things we've covered and a lot of different methods we've covered, a lot of things that you need to ask yourself and do some self-assessment. So in summary, we hope that you we've helped you. We hope that you've learned from this experience or this program, and I forgot to tell you again, I apologize, changed the slide. So we hope we've helped you, first of all, identify your study skills to prepare for lifelong learning. Second, to look critically at the content outline sections to help in your preparation, whether you decide to work as an individual or you decide to work as part of a group. And I will tell you, a lot of chapters have study groups each year for those individuals who must either take the first exam or who must recertify. So consider that. Present your needs to your chapter and see if anybody's willing to work with you. Review the specifics in the content outline that should be familiar to your to the practice, such as the basic statistical calculations and various different isolation strategies. Then prioritize your study objectives based on your knowledge and your learning style. And make a plan and say, okay, this is where I'm at, this is what I've learned, this is what I need to learn, this is what I'm comfortable with, and this is what I'm not comfortable with. And set a plan up for your study and your preparation for the exam. Thank you for your interest today, and this is the last slide. Check your CBIC website, which is www.cbic.org, to download a copy of the Candidate Handbook. Look at the references that are listed there and the resources that are available to you. And good luck. And thank you very, very much for this opportunity to present this information.
Marie, thank you very much. I'm glad your throat held out through all of that.
I am too. I apologize.
Getting a little, you don't need to apologize. I understand you were almost completely speechless earlier in the week, so I'm glad you got a little
of that. Yes, I was.
And back with us is our friend Sharon Christofiak.
Hi, Sharon.
I have to share with the whole group. When our power flickered here, it's a perfectly lovely day. There's not a cloud in the sky, but we've been having these little power flicks on and off for like a half a second. I kept talking, not realizing none of you were listening. So, I am so sorry. But as Paul promised, we were going to give you all the answers for the questions for the exam. I just want to go back to slide 36 for you. I feel like I kind of picked this one out, and I really wanted to give you a clue. This is in the Canada Handbook, and I just pretty much cut and pasted it. It's our first sample question. When you look at the question, an easy way, since we're giving you tips, to try and study this. It says patients develop symptoms 2 to 4 hours after eating turkey salad. The clue is not turkey salad. The clue that you're going to put in your list is how fast you can get food poisoning from any of the various organisms if you're creating a list. Of that group, only Staph aureus has preformed toxin. So when you get sick, 2 to 4 hours after eating something, you're most likely going to be infected. Well, not infected. It's actually a toxin poisoning with Staph aureus. So this is kind of some of the tricks to studying, is to identify that if you get sick 4 days later, it's not Staph. So this is the kind of ways to figure out when you're looking at things, picking out the important things to know so that it really improves your practice. It's not something that you need definitely just for the test, but it's something that will help you next time you're sick or somebody even makes a comment to you, what could this be? It gives you a clue on outbreak investigation. So hopefully that helped.
I think the other key there, too, is the most. You know, sometimes people forget to look at those little words in there that mean everything.
Thank you. That was tremendous clarification. Sharon, you mentioned early on about the teleclass that we did in February, on February 21st. If anyone who's listening has not heard that lecture and would like to, the lecture was called Understanding the Practice Analysis and CIC Exam Content Outline. You can go back into the teleclass registration and register for the teleclass, which will give you access to the slides, the handouts, and the online recording that's already been posted there. Or you could wait for 12 months when that goes into the recordings library. The recordings library is a free access area that's accessible through the WeberTraining.com website. It's in the menu down the left-hand side. There are more than 150 lecture recordings and handout notes that are there that are searchable by keyword. And I think if you put in CIC as keyword, you'll get three or four lectures that are available to you there. Those lectures are the ones that are at least a year old or that were free registration. The free registration ones go straight there, and when the lectures reach their first anniversary, they get posted there as well, along with the handout notes.
Does the CIC examination on the computer system, does it allow you to go through the exam, pick out the questions you'd like to do first, and then go back to do the ones you're not so sure about, or do you have to follow them in a sequential order?
You can go in any order you want. We actually have to take the exams, you know, from home before we actually have test committee meetings. And what I tend to do is just like go 1, 2, 3, you know, straight through. But anything that you don't like the question, you have to think about it, you can actually put like a little flag down in the corner. And you get a period of time that you get to practice before you actually start the timed exam. You can flag anything that you want to go back to and look at again. So it's real easy. And for those that are visual learners, you can make yourself a list of the number, too.
I'm interested in doing the, I believe there's a sample exam available on the computer, just to get an idea of where my strong and weak points are. When that's marked, do you get an indication of your strengths and weaknesses, or just an overall mark for it?
You actually do. You know, at least from what, we've never gotten to take it, you know, for the scoring, but from what we've been told by the AMP people, it does tell you which areas you did well in. And that is the practice exam, and that's, I believe, $50. But you can keep going back into it for, I think it's a period of 60 days, and practice and practice. But once you get to the very end where you say, okay, I want to know how I did, once you hit the send button, you can't get back into it. But we've heard from people that have taken it, and they find it to be a really helpful indicator whether people feel comfortable taking it and if they know enough that they're ready to roll on the real exam.
I'm wondering if there is any other practice exam in addition to the CBIC practice exam.
Not that I'm aware of. I know APIC has the, you know, like the training book, and they actually do the certification preparation course, but I don't think anybody else has put out like any kind of a real practice exam like the one we've got, because it's the proprietary AMP software for the exam.
Yes.
It's called
okay.
An LXR test.
Okay. And no additional study books that you know of.
The APIC book has got all kinds of questions, you know, that you can go through and review. And supposedly there is the newer edition that's very good, but we always have to remind people that we don't get to collaborate with APIC, you know, to tell them exactly what's on it. So, you know, we're not entirely sure if they're totally the same, but it's basic practice, so it really should be helpful if you're the visual learner.
How often is the online CBIC exam changed? Is it every 3 months, 6 months? I have written it in the past, and I need to write the CBIC exam, but I'm wondering if I go online again, would I be rewriting the same exam I wrote, you know, 4 months ago?
I'm not sure we're even supposed to, like, share this, but I'm sure there's only a few thousand friends here on the line. There are actually a new exam comes out every year, a new version. But there are multiple, like, copies, so that if you have to take one 4 months later, you won't get the exact same exam. So it's like the whole thing that was based on the content outline. And the numbers that were on the slides near the end, after each content category, I don't know if Marie mentioned that specifically. I know I had mentioned it on a previous teleclass. Like, let's see, it's slide 38, where it says surveillance and epidemiologic investigation, parenthesis 32. There will always be 32 questions on that part of the content outline for the 5-year period that we're using that practice analysis. So you can kind of gauge. They may not always be the same question, but there will be the same concentration of questions on basically the same topics. If you're talking about outbreak investigation, you know, for foodborne outbreaks, it may be a different question, but it'll be the same type topics. We try and get the same questions based on all those different categories. Hopefully that helped.
We have come to the close of our teleclass. I'd like to thank Maria and Sharon for your wonderful presentation and for sticking with us even through some telephone difficulties. I hope that you'll be back with us again, and I look forward to doing more of these in the future. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone.
And to everyone, until we meet again,
bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.